Glowworm by Alison Greaves. Chapter 1. Viv closes the till with a bang, punches in the lock code, retrieves her bag from the cluttered shelf underneath. Checks inside. Keys, painkillers, earbuds, phone, all present. With her cane, she levers herself off the stool and stands carefully, shifting her weight from ankle to ankle, making sure she's not about to fall. She falls a lot, has done for years, is an expert at it, but she prefers not to do it inside the cashier booth at Beachway Automotive and Cycling. Embarrassing. Steadied, she leans against the greasy plastic safety shield and struggles to raise the strap of her shoulder bag past her elbow. Some days it's easy, other days it's almost impossible. Today, Charlotte, shiftmate, stunningly blonde and pretty, with a cascade of freckles from forehead to jawline, mad for horses, comes to her rescue, hooking a thumb into the shoulder strap and sliding it up onto Viv's shoulder. Charlotte's rewards are a mumbled thanks from Viv and a barrage of complaints from the old man she's serving. She rolls her eyes at Viv, who expresses her gratitude more properly and in their shared language by flipping the man off for her while Charlotte's body obscures his view. Screw him. It's not like he needs someone's active attention to continue counting pennies out of pockets. Katie, new girl, tall, quiet, short-haired and soft. Viv perpetually wants to give her a hug, waits for Viv to vacate at maximum safe distance with nervous eyes and bleach wipes. From behind her Tweety Pie mask, she wishes Viv a good evening. Viv returns the sentiment through a black cloth mask from Beachway's burgeoning pandemic section. It makes her ears sore. She kicks open the dirty little door that locks them all inside the booth and ducks out. Katie sets to sanitizing. Viv feels pretty good, shoulder aside. Might not need the cane tonight except as a prop. People used to seeing her with it become irritating and overexcited when they see her without it. Strangers are more inclined to walk into her. Viv's never quite worked out if people give her a wide berth when she has her cane out of respect for her as a disabled woman, or out of fear for her as a woman with a ready weapon. She sets off across the store looking for Matt. He intercepts her as she crosses the threshold to Automotive and limits his greeting to a pair of waggled eyebrows and a gentle one-armed shoulder hug. Viv winces, collarbone grinding, and shoves him off. Matt pretends to be offended, a game he persists in playing. He's the kind of ex-boyfriend who thinks of himself as an ex-lover. It's been years since they dated, years since she decided she was attracted to men mostly out of obligation. Years since she followed him to university, dropped out, got stuck in this town. Mistakes. He remains friendly, but a little too hopeful. She's made it clear. She's a lesbian. He set her up with a couple of women he knows. It didn't go well. He just wants her in his life, he says. Vivian. He thinks her name sounds classy. Matt, how's my car? Viv's Corsa has been blinking its check engine light for weeks, and this morning finally followed through on its threats, stranding her on the grass verge 5 minutes out from work. Matt collected her in the Beachway tow truck, promising a fix by the end of her shift, and chided her for letting it get so bad. The perks of having an ex-lover on staff, free labour and repairs and parts at cost, provided you don't mind lying to the franchise owner.
Sorry, he says, we've been swamped. I had a chance to check it over after lunch, and it's not as straightforward as I thought.
Don't worry about it.
You should have brought it in before it broke down.
I know.
You definitely shouldn't have covered the check engine light with a post-it.
I know.
I'm pretty sure I know what's wrong.
Oh? Matt rattles off a long sentence which Viv ignores.
I can have it done by tomorrow, I think.
He finishes frowning.
Sorry, it's not sooner.
It's fine, Matt, Viv says, sighing at car and ex-lover both. I appreciate this, really.
Need a lift home?
No, it's fine.
I don't like the thought of you taking the bus. Lots of mouth breathers with no masks.
It's fine.
I don't want you to get the Rona.
It's really fine.
Seriously, I can take 20 minutes to run you home.
Matt, I'm not going home. I'm going out.
A grin eats his whole face, visible even under his grey mask, which has little cloth rivets around the edge. Probably claims to be gunmetal on the Amazon listing.
Vivian, are you seeing someone?
No. A lie. I'm meeting a friend.
Just a friend?
Yes, Viv says, disengaging. I'll be in the back if anyone asks until I'm gone.
My shift's over at 7,
Matt yells as Viv retreats.
If you change your mind.
She dismisses him with a wave and silently curses herself for using her bad shoulder to do so. She can feel his gaze on her anyway, watching her intently as if she might suddenly cast aside cane and curled lip and run to him, fling herself into his arms like old times. She closes the staff-only door behind her, never more grateful for the dungeon of the staff kitchenette. Viv empties her locker and backs into the disabled bathroom, latching it with her hip. Safely inside, she sags against the door, letting the accumulated tension drain away. Alone, she can be herself. She'll soon have to go back outside again. She'll have to be careful to walk without a limp, to use her cane in an appropriately dignified manner. She'll once again have to be the kind of disabled person generously sorted by the abled community into the category human, along with themselves, slightly above her. Harder every year. She pulls off the ugly blue beachwear uniform and stuffs it into a carrier bag, drops her mask into a Ziploc, washes hands, face, upper body, anything customers might have breathed on. The safety shield around the cashier's booth necessarily has small gaps for scanning items and handling cash. Customers have lately tried to fit their whole heads through. Charlotte says she thinks they're taking bets on who can give the beachwear staff the highest viral load. A shower would be nice, but staff facilities barely stretch to a trio of bathrooms, some ratty lockers, and a very big table with a very small television. You can fit a dozen members of staff and one training video on it, verified experimentally. Sunscreen, fresh mask with daisies on, sunglasses, sanitise the cane, wash hands again. Out of another plastic bag comes a knee-length sundress, red, with daisies to match. Viv drops it over her head. It's a good dress for the hot late summer. Loose, light, with pockets for her sunglasses and to give her somewhere to hide her hands when they shake. Trousers would be better to conceal the patchwork bruises on her legs as much as anything else, but the needle's been high since mid-morning and the air's standing still, dripping with moisture. People will just have to deal with her bruised calves. She checks herself in the full length. She looks okay. She unclips her hair and shakes it out, letting it fall to her shoulders and silently thanking her distant on-purpose mother for her straight hair. Her cousin is curly, like her dad and uncle, and watching her routine makes Viv's arms ache. Finally, she kicks off the cheap plastic flats and laces up her boots. They're approaching half as old as she is. They've moulded themselves to fit her perfectly, and they support her ankles. They're basically extensions of her legs at this point, more reliable than her actual feet. One last look, one last hand sanitise, and Viv's off out the staff entrance, dumping her work crap in her locker on the way and pausing to stretch against the back wall of the warehouse, preparing for the long, slow walk to Lloyd's Bar and Jill. Neither of the two people in the bar are Jill. One of them serves her a vodka and coke, the other's a forgettable businessman type, sat at the far end of the bar, unmasked and looking at her a little too often. There's 4 1-metre interval duct tape safety lines between them, emphasising the emptiness of the place and making Viv wistful for busier times. Everyone's still too spooked by COVID to want to go to mid-tier bars mid-afternoon, mid-week, and Viv doesn't blame them. She'd be at home herself, but this would have been one of her few chances to get together with Jill. They first met at the physiotherapist. Group therapy, the bit where people who've had to learn to accept a loss of function get together to complain about the lectures they get from people who haven't had to learn to accept a loss of function. Jill, sat across from Viv and eating jelly babies, was too thin, too small, and too frail, and didn't hide the dark circles under her eyes the way Viv did. And she was mean, sarcastic, and brutally rude to the people who were utterly failing to help her. On the day they met, Jill turned the full force of her fury on a nurse who'd twisted Viv's shoulder the wrong way, subjecting the man to a lecture that sounded scripted, but that Jill swore, as Viv drove her home to a tower block with a broken lift, was spontaneous. She was just that fucking angry all the time. It made her loquacious. Jill shaved her head between their first and second group sessions, and that was it for Viv. They kissed in the waiting room, laughed at how unromantic it was. Our time is limited, she said on a cold night out, before the pandemic, as they sat in the grassy university grounds. One day I won't be able to eat this burger on my own. She held it aloft. It wobbled. One day some fucker will have to feed me and I will have to pretend to be grateful. But today, she gesticulated with the burger, taking in the sweep of the hill below them, the rabbits cautiously camped out at the edge of the wood, the troop of students drunk and staggering, guiding each other along the path between accommodation buildings. Today I can sit here, under my own steam, and eat shitty, greasy burgers until I'm sick. She chewed a little more. Viv stroked the back of her free hand. So I think I'm done with doctors. They can have me back when I can't get away from them anymore. They didn't meet at physiotherapy after that, but at the bar next door. Close enough to Jill's flat for her to stagger there even on a reasonably difficult day, and walkable for Viv from work or home if you stretch the definition of walkable a little. Viv looks around the empty bar again. Things must be bad if she hasn't even texted. Viv doesn't have a key to the flat. When Jill doesn't want to be seen, she doesn't want to be seen, and nothing will make Viv break that boundary. She knows it's hard to feel unashamed when your body breaks, hard not to retreat, and when you can't hide, that anger takes over. You say things you don't mean, or that you only mean sometimes. They'll talk again, meet up again, when she's ready. Viv glares at her phone, fiddles idly with her cane. Her legs and back ache from the 40-minute walk, her shoulders numb from the bag, the stupid barstools pressing into her coccyx. Alone with her thoughts and her cane and her phone and her vodka and coke, Viv pulls down the mask, drains the drink and gets another. Alcohol's not a bad painkiller if she doesn't have to drive, doesn't have to work the next day, and doesn't mind walking even more slowly and carefully than usual. You fall bad when you're drunk and you don't necessarily know it. She taps out a quick message. Hope you're okay. TMB when you can, VX. She doesn't expect an answer. Not until tomorrow at the earliest.
Everything okay?
It's the guy, the business guy, still watching her on and off the whole time. Perhaps she shouldn't have acted like he wasn't there when she came in, should have picked a booth, gotten out of his line of sight, but sometimes that makes them approach you when otherwise they would have been content to stare. And anyway, being watched is the background static of the young and female. She looks at him now, 40s or a young 50s. Office clothes, attractive, if you're into men twice your age. Viv is not. Still not masked, even though he's ignoring his drink, she wonders why the barman hasn't insisted on it. Incredibly pale, but that's hardly unusual. Lockdown's messed with the English such that most of the white ones have become blotchy and tired-looking. I'm fine, Viv says, putting on her best fuck off expression, glad her own mask is chinned for vodka and coke number two. Sneers don't work so well when you can't see the mouth. Pointedly, she looks back at her phone. She'll linger over her second drink, she decides. It's tempting to down it and leave immediately, leaving him nursing his drink and crush, but she's not convinced she can deal gracefully with the dismount from the barstool, and the last thing she wants is a creepy guy offering to help in exchange for an accidental tit feel.
Are you sure you're okay?
Office man asks. He's got both hands on the bar, getting ready to come over and solve all her problems with his magnetic masculine presence. I'd rather be alone, that's all.
Suit yourself.
Viv decides to blank him. She holds up her drink with her left hand and her phone with her right and radiates busyness, hiding with the angle of her phone that all she's doing is scrolling Twitter. Some appalling BBC programme is top of trending and Viv studiously attempts to avoid learning anything about it. They always turn out to be some banal variety show with the same 24 celebs who are in everything. She's already been forced to find out that The Masked Singer isn't a modern reimagining of The Phantom of the Opera, but actually something much more baffling, and that's her fill of TV culture for the year. The man leaves after a few minutes, off to some other sparsely populated bar to bother disinterested women. Viv wishes them luck, relaxes her shoulders and gets off the internet. It's not good for her blood pressure, probably. Our time is limited, trite as Jill acknowledged, as ready to poke holes in herself as everyone else, but haunting. Viv's 26 and the older she gets, the more her pain progresses, the more her life is stolen from her by work, At 30, she'll be leaving work only to collapse straight into bed until it's time to go back to work again. At 35, she'll have to fight the Jobsworths at the Job Centre for Disability Benefits from the other end of a phone call. Viv's dreams disintegrated long ago, and nothing remains but the determination to get through this day, this week, this year, and every time her ankle collapses under her, she wonders, will this be the time it doesn't recover? She finishes her drink. Time to go. Viv surprises herself by feeling pretty spry by the time she gets outside. Maybe it's the alcohol. She experimentally stretches her legs again, using the brick wall of the bar as leverage, and finds them fairly responsive. Not much pain at all, considering. She sets off, digging in her bag for her headphones and finding them wrapped around a pen. She's so preoccupied with untangling them that she doesn't notice the guy from the bar walk up behind her until he puts his hands on her shoulders and shoves her with impossible strength into an alleyway between the two blocks of flats. Viv is an expert at falling. She's practiced it, understands how to unwind the body to dissipate the force as much as possible. The trick is to spread the impact. She knows when to put her arms out, when to curl up, when to go limp, and when to brace. This isn't like any fall she's ever had. She's moving too fast, too far. The angle's all wrong. She's been pitched like a cricket ball. She puts her arms out anyway, scrapes one painfully against brick. She's falling towards the grass on one side of the alley and not the cobblestones on the other. A small blessing. But she's still going too fast to have even a hope of a properly controlled landing. She hits dirt and it hurts like her first fall. Worse. Something in her leg snaps. Something in her hip crunches. In her panic, she's forgotten to go limp, but it wouldn't have made a difference. Viv's been thrown like a toy, and like a toy she lands with limbs at comical angles, twisting and tumbling in a mockery of grace. Viv takes a second to revel in her pain. It's overwhelming. And she yells from the back of her throat, a dirty scream, deep and venomous, drawn from the agony in her hip and her calf and from the terrifying numbness building beneath it. She moves, blinks away the lights in her eyes, grits her teeth against what's to come, pushes against the wall and struggles as upright as she can get, climbing a finger's height at a time, fighting for every inch. Something slips in her damaged hip and she almost falls again but locks her injured leg at the knee, jams it into the wall. Pain bubbles out of her in a whimper. Who the fuck is that guy? Who can do that to a person? Viv's not exactly a heavyweight, 5'9" on the days she can stand fully upright and, like Jill, too thin. But in her occasional encounters with drunkards who think it's funny to try and trip the disabled girl, she's been at most knocked down. This man grabs her by the shoulders and the next thing she knows, she's flying. Whatever he did, Viv's not anxious to find out what he does for an encore. The entrance to the alley is too far away. The distance she's covered, impossible. She must have imagined the hands on her shoulders. He must have hit her with a car or something. She's travelled, best guess, 25, 30 feet. Her vision clouds. Focus, she whispers. Focus, focus, focus. A mantra timed to a heartbeat. It's just pain, Vivian. Is there anything you're more experienced at dealing with? Your body's been breaking since college. Deal with it. Viv leans on the alcohol, takes stock. She can't see the man or the car or whatever hit her, so he's not followed her in yet. Maybe he's backing the car up. Maybe he's had his fun and driven off. Maybe the fucker's watching her, waiting for his moment. Whatever. She has a little time. There's another street at the far end of the alleyway. If she can get there ahead of him, she can get help. Her bag's back near the entrance to the alley, where it fell from her shoulder and spilled its guts on the grass. It can stay there, she's not turning around. A shame she doesn't have her phone anymore, but if she continues the way she's going, gets to the street on the other side, someone out there can call an ambulance, and maybe the fucking army. She puts pressure on her leg again and almost blacks out. Where's her cane? Never mind. Focus. And move, Vivian! She shifts her weight to her right side. The worst of it is all on the left. Broken leg, broken hip. If she can bias right, it might be possible to make it. And what's a broken hip and a broken leg anyway? Ignore it. Deal with it later. Viv inches along the wall, paying for every moment, struggling to control herself. Every pain has a flavour, and this is a new one, a bitter salt water, corrosive and suffocating. It overwhelms her coping mechanisms. It floods her. Fuck it. She hooks her fingers into cracks in the brickwork, puts her weight on her hands, elbows, shoulders, pushes, and the colour drains from the world. Are you okay, dear one? It's him. Move faster. Finally, fully upright, Viv pushes away from the wall and staggers forward, yelling out again as she takes more weight than she intended on her left side. A horrible, wet sensation, and bone scrapes against bone. Viv vomits into her mouth, spits it into her mask. She pushes again, another few feet forward, finding purchase on the wall, pushing away from it and landing back a couple of seconds later like an astronaut pushing off in zero gravity. Like a gymnast dancing across the mat, making the lightest contact with every step. One, push. Two, push. Three, push. Four. Viv trips, lands hard against the wall and barely stays upright. Her whole left leg below the knee is completely numb now, but not in the way she's used to. Like when she steps the wrong way and her joints strangle her muscles. Rather, her leg has gone numb in the way Viv thinks an amputated limb might. Blood smears on the whitewash as she starts to fall. Dear one, I only want to help you. Viv hates his liar's voice, pictures his awful, entreating face, forces herself upright again, pushes off too hard and stumbles first on dirt and then on cobblestone. Her healthy ankle fails her and she lands hard against the wall on the other side of the alley. Viv hits brick with a broken hip and feels it like an earthquake. Wait for me, please. Fuck off! One more step, and another. And another. Her leg can't hold her, her hip can't hold her, no cane, nothing to grip onto, just miles of blank white bricks and a line of dirt and stone that repeats as far as she can see, like a nightmare. She collapses, twists at the last moment, lands in the dirt on her good side, facing up. Viv is an expert at falling. The man from the bar advances. He walks casually like he's out for an afternoon stroll, but covers the ground between them too quickly. And when he leans down and presses her into the ground, she sinks inches into the dirt. Too strong. This will all be over soon, he says. Viv wants to rip off her mask and spit in his face. Instead, she braces herself and kicks out at him, putting all her strength into her one functional leg. Her hip punishes her and screams, but she kicks again. Again! Again! Hip grinding against itself, other leg already a lost cause. She feels her ruptured bones tearing her apart but keeps going, shrieks her defiance and hatred with each kick. But every moment begins to extract more from Viv than she has. She's spending her own body weight on its last defense, ablating herself against him. There's no coming back from this. She'll never walk again. The man from the bar intercepts her weak, useless attempts at hurting him. Holds down her leg with one hand, grabs her wrists with the other, pins her like a butterfly. Viv has nothing left. Whatever he wants, he's going to get it. And he smiles, and suddenly she doesn't want to look at him, won't give him the satisfaction, won't even acknowledge him. Fuck him. She looks past him instead, towards the sliver of sky. He kneels on her legs and strokes her exposed shoulder and moves her neck to the side with revolting gentleness. And Viv sees a figure 7 or 8 stories up, on the roof of the block of flats, silhouetted against the last of the light. Someone's looking down. Someone's watching. Someone can help, but Viv's got no breath to beg. She's empty, and with face masked and hands pinned, she has no way to communicate except to look up, helpless, and plead with her eyes. The figure on the roof starts to fade, and for a moment Viv thinks that maybe they're coming to help, before she realises everything else is fading too. At least she can almost see the stars.